Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season two of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast.
They're a bunch of guys who ain't never played the game, and they never got the girls in high school, and they just want to get in the game.
With your host, Jonathan Von Tobel.
See, the thing is, you guys look at me, you see the backwards hat, the gray socks, the funky outfit, and you say, now this guy's a chump, am I right?
No, f***ing geek. I'm a f***ing geek.
Only on the VSiN Podcast Network.
What's up, folks? Welcome in. Happy All-Star break. We finally reached it. We're about 70% of the way through the NBA season. All-Star break is upon us. Good way, if you've been handicapping every single day of the NBA year, to kind of recharge the batteries, retool on things that you've gotten wrong. Going to spend this time studying up, getting ready for the home stretch here, last 6 weeks of the NBA season. Already going to be around when we come back from the All-Star break this coming Thursday. So I think we got a fun episode today. We won't take it super serious. There's some news to discuss. But other than that, we'll take a look at All-Star weekend, the competition, the teams, all that kind of stuff. And then we'll come back around on Monday with an episode kind of looking ahead to the second half, if you will, even though, again, 70% of the season's already in the books. But what we're looking at in terms of play-in races, remaining schedules, what we can expect, all sorts of things in the final 6 weeks of the NBA season. So look out for that one on Monday. As for today, before we get to the All-Star weekend and the festivities that will be, a couple of stories to discuss. First off, of course, Anthony Davis, you all know by now, got injured Wednesday. Injuries an ankle. He's going to be reevaluated in 4 weeks. Pretty big problem there. And like, it sucks for the Lakers, mainly because, you know, the continuity has not been there for this team, as we know all season long. From a statistical standpoint, right, cold-blooded numbers, it's not the biggest drop-off in the world if AD can't play on the floor this season. Anthony Davis and the Lakers, with him on the floor, they've been outscored by 2.7 points every 100 possessions. Their offense has been atrocious, just scoring 106.8 per 100. Defense has been fine, giving up 109.4, and they don't, you know, they get up and down the floor, not an insane rate, 17.2% in their transition frequency. But really, the minutes off the floor, with Anthony Davis off the floor, this is where it gets kind of intriguing, because while people might be willing to punt on the Lakers without Anthony Davis, the Lakers without Anthony Davis have not actually been terrible, and they did play a good chunk of games without him, right? And off the floor this season, Anthony Davis off the floor, net rating, it's actually just -1. It's still negative, but it goes from -2.7 to -1. The big change is their offense. They average nearly 6 points per 100 possessions more on offense without Anthony Davis out there, 112.4. And they only give up four more points, per 100 possessions on the floor. Their defensive rating goes from 109.4 to 113.4. So there's a drop-off defensively, clearly, but they make up a lot of it on the offensive end themselves. So the offense gets better, the defense gets worse. You know, and you look at some of these numbers with LeBron James and Russell Westbrook together without Anthony Davis, and you get a little bit more positive, right? Russell Westbrook, LeBron James on the floor together without Anthony Davis, net rating plus 0.9, offensive rating 114.3, defensive rating at about 113.3. Their transition offense is solid. They add about 3.5 points per 100 possessions. through transition offense. And then you whittle it down even further, and you look at some of these lineups with LeBron James at center, which is actually really intriguing. LeBron James playing center and Russell Westbrook on the floor. Most of these minutes playing point guard for Russell Westbrook. Net rating for the Lakers, plus 6.4. Offense, averaging 118.9 points per 100 possessions. They add 3.6 points per 100 possessions through transition offense. Defense is still pretty poor, 112.5. That defense is going to be a problem throughout the year. But when AD's not out there, LeBron takes a couple of these, you know, a few of these lineups and plays center, and the returns have been awesome for the Los Angeles Lakers statistically. Their most used lineup with LeBron out there at the five, Russell Westbrook at the point guard position, then Malik Monk, Avery Bradley, Stanley Johnson, and then, of course, LeBron James at the five. Those five out there together in that positional order, plus 13.1 points per 100 possessions, according to Cleaning the Glass. So it's not going to be the worst thing in the world, I would think, in these weeks without him. Because, again, 4 weeks he gets reevaluated, he does not come back. And that was a scary injury. So I'm honestly surprised that he's going to come back. It's actually cool to hear that it sounds serious, but that he's got a shot at coming back and playing basketball again this season, given the 90-degree angle which his ankle took in that game against Utah Jazz on Wednesday. But not surprisingly, you got to stay healthy for the Lakers. Buyout market only has so much, and looking at what the potential buyout candidates are, and we'll get more into this on the Monday episode, but it doesn't look great for the Los Angeles Lakers, because I know that was a report that they're turning their eye toward the buyout market. One of the guys that's on this roster is actually a contender to get to the buyout market. That'd be Kent Bazemore. But you look at Eric Bledsoe potentially being on the buyout market. He could maybe find his way back to Los Angeles, but, of course, to the other team. Goran Dragic be out there. The Lakers and the Bulls are reportedly interested in him. Drew Eubanks out of Toronto, Derek Favors, they don't really need another big from Oklahoma City. Gary Harris out of Orlando, not moved to the deadline by the Magic, could be bought out here and be a candidate. Jeremy Lamb, I mean, there's on and on and on. We can go down the list of guys that are potentially available for some of these teams and potential additions. Tomas Satoransky, you know, as you can tell, I'm clearly focusing on backcourt players here. But, you know, there's a lot. John Wall, Tristan Thompson, Dennis Schroeder, Tomas Satoransky, Mike Muscala. So keep an eye on those, a lot of those names in the buyout market for LA. But none of those teams are, or none of those guys are flipping your odds at this point, which right now, DraftKings, Los Angeles Lakers, 45-1 to win an NBA title. So it's tough, and it sucks because you want continuity out there. But I think painting that picture of what the Lakers look like without Anthony Davis, what they look like in some of these lineups with, you know, LeBron at the five, not all is lost here for the Lakers. They're still going to pretty much be the same team. And there's a chance, dare I say, they could be a little bit better, especially on the offensive end of the floor when forced to play without him. Now, having said that, this team seems destined to be a play-in team. They're 6 games out of the 9 seed with 24 left on the schedule, and their schedule is tough. Third hardest schedule by win percentage. They got 2 games left for the Clippers. They got 2 games left for the Warriors. They got 2 against Dallas, 1 against Phoenix, 2 against Toronto, 2 against Denver. They're going to be a play-in team. Just depends on if they're going to finish in that 7-8 bracket or in that 9-10 bracket and be forced to win 2 games. And even if they finish in the 7-8, obviously no guarantee that they only play 1 game because, of course, they could lose that 7-8 matchup if it's going to be the Los Angeles Clippers, who seem to be, we'll call it, comfortably slotted in there, but plenty of time for them to slide. So I mentioned they play Toronto twice. Speaking of Toronto, Toronto, like the city, the powers that be, are going to drop proof of vaccination for fans on March 1st. So you're going to ask, does that matter? Well, initially permitted capacity was going to rise to 50% on Monday, 100% on March 14th. But on Monday, Ontario government announced starting Thursday, 50% of seating capacity would be allowed in large sporting event live music venues and increased to full capacity March 1st. Why does this matter? Well, if you remember a topic we had on this pod about, it was right around New Year's Eve, with the cutting down of the fans, you figured, hey man, some of these home games for Toronto are going to take on a bubble-like atmosphere. It's going to be empty arenas, good shooting lines, maybe scoring picks up. Well, in the 12 games that they have played since playing in front of empty, limited fans and, you know, friends, all that stuff, overs in those 12 games, 9-3 to the over. So did pan out that way, as we discussed on this podcast. Those games at home did go over the total. So we'll see what happens as more fans pile into the building. You start to get some more sellout crowds, because this is a good team, so you're going to start to get some really solid crowds, I would think, gathering to watch this Toronto team. So just something to keep in mind. Nothing we want to, you know, focus on entirely too much here, but something to keep in mind as you move forward with getting ready for the second half, I put in air quotes, of the NBA season. Toronto's going to start playing in front of these full-capacity crowds again, and that could affect what we're seeing from a scoring perspective.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time. I'm talking Hall of Famers, MVPs, gold medalists.
I absolutely hate the Colts, bro. This game, I swear, led to the Deflategate.
Hey, guys, this ball's a little flat.
Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl?
Julian walking around, I'm pretty sure he had his shirt off for reasons I'm not sure. He was saying, gotta believe.
Oh, you gotta believe. From 18-1 with Eli.
Are you calling Bill just a cheater? Is that what you're saying right now?
He's looking for an advantage.
The 2004 ALCS with Big Pop.
The Red Sox in 2004 bounced back after the 3-0 in a winner chicken dinner. Homie.
The Immaculate Reception with Terry Bradshaw.
Fired the ball. I hear the roar of the crowd. I never thought he caught the ball, but he did.
We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So with that, let's take a look at the All-Star Weekend. Let's have a little bit of fun with this. Skills Challenge, the three-point contest. I'll touch on the slam dunk contest. I don't really love the slam dunk contest that much. And I didn't grow up really in the heyday of the slam dunk contests. So they really fell off as I was becoming and a full-on basketball fan. The last good slam dunk contest was Aaron Gordon and Zach LaVine, right, all those years ago. But these are really falling off, and it just comes down to, like, some youngish players, kids that just want to participate and get their names in there. You don't really see the guys that you really want to see for the most part, but we'll get to that. So dunk contest, skills contest, and then, of course, three-point shooting, and then we'll get to the All-Star game itself. So let's start with the skills contest because I got to tell you, I'm disappointed, man. Like, out of all of these challenges, skills competitions, whatever, is an All-Star Weekend, I was actually a really big fan of the skills challenge. My complaint was that I think you expanded the field, right? I think what would they do? Would they do 8, if I remember correctly? 4 on each side of the bracket, and then they would play in a bracket format till you reach the end. And granted, that would take a while if you expand the format, but like, I liked the little gauntlet that they ran, and it was only a one-on-one kind of thing where you start with the ball, you dribble to the cones, got to hit a layup, all of a sudden come back, got to hit a three-point shot, come back. Like, it was a really, I thought it was really fun. Like, the relays were really quick, And you got some upsets. 1 year cashed on Bam Adebayo to win the Skills Challenge at 10-1. We've seen Carl Anthony Towns win it before. So I thought they were really cool. I thought they were really fun. But they're changing it up this year. No longer is it mano y mano. No longer is it one-on-one. Now we have three teams competing in the Skills Challenge. We have Team Rooks, Josh Giddey, Cade Cunningham, Scotty Barnes will be on the team. Team Cavs, Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, Jarrett Allen. Remember, All-Star Weekend is in Cleveland. Team Antetokounmpo, Giannis, Thanasis, and Alex Antetokounmpo. Those are your three teams. Team Rooks is an odds-on favorite, -125. Team Cavs, 2-1, and Team Antetokounmpo, +320. Contest rules. Three teams will compete during the first three rounds, in which the two teams with the most challenged points will earn the right to advance to the final round. Round one, you're going to shoot. All three players from each team individually get 30 seconds to shoot from five spots, with the more difficult shots being worth more points. Team with the most collective points will win the round and earn 100 challenge points. Edge, Team Rooks. Well, we'll get that. Round two, passing. All players will participate in passing to moving targets that range in size and distance. Again, the more difficult passes are worth more points. The team with the most collective points will win the round and earn 100 challenge points. And then the real life, third round, will resemble the past NBA Skills Challenge format. All players will participate in a timed relay, five-step relay, outlet pass, dribbling through pylons, making a short shot, making a corner three, dribble to the opposite end, and make a shot. Team with the fastest time will win the round and earn 200 challenge points, which then moves you on to the final round. Final round of the Skills Challenge will feature two teams competing to make a half-court shot. Two teams with the most points move on. Sounds a little bit more convoluted, but at the end of the day, when you look at this, so we're talking about the first three rounds being shooting, passing, and a relay. Shooting, all three players, each team individually, get 30 seconds to shoot from five spots, with the more difficult shots being worth more points. So automatically, you look at a team like the Cleveland Cavaliers, who have Evan Mobley, who I love, and Jarrett Allen on their team. And again, in a shooting competition. So let's talk about this from that perspective really quickly. Jarrett Allen this year, let's take a look at his profile as a shooter, huh? Takes 72% of his shots within 4 feet of the basket. Takes 23% of his shots from 4 to 14 feet. And then it gets progressively shorter from there. Only 4% from 14 feet or out to the perimeter. 26% overall from mid-range. He has taken a grand total of 6 corner threes this year. 9 overall three-point attempts on 5,566 shot attempts. In terms of accuracy, while he can hit long mid-range shots, he's only taken 20 of them and hit 10 of them. Congratulations on the 50%, but that's not really great in terms of frequency of attempts. And then, of course, you can get to the corner threes and the non-corner threes. He is, as a whole, 1-9 from three-point range on the year, Jarrett Allen. Evan Mobley, a little bit better, right, in terms of what he does as a player. He can expand the floor a little bit more, but still not really great for Mobley, right? Now, most of his shots come from the short mid to a long mid-range area of the floor. 35% of his attempts come from short mid-range, again, 4 to 14 feet. 11% of his attempts come from long mid-range. If we're talking about accuracy, he is only a 27% shooter on 66 three-point attempts this year. He has hit 6 of 16 corner three-point attempts, but again, sample size, not that long. And he's mostly a finisher and can hit some long mid-range shots, but again, only 29 of 72 on the year. I do not doubt Darius Garland in any way whatsoever in terms of what he's able to do as a shooter. He's actually been incredible in terms of his efficiency as a scorer this year. He has really ramped it up in his ability to score from multiple areas of the floor. But this year, just to give you an idea of it, he's already surpassed the amount of three-point attempts he took last season in 54 games. He's got 298 this year, but he's maintaining a good shooting percentage, shoots 38% from three. He's a 38% three-point shooter on non-corner shots. All mid-range attempts, 158 or 229 or 299 on the season, shooting 53% from mid-range, and a decent finisher within 4 feet. But again, we're talking about shooting here. It seems like both the Antetokounmpos and the Cavs would be at a pretty big disadvantage to the Rooks. I shouldn't say pretty big. I'd say a good disadvantage with a guy like Cade Cunningham as part of Team Rooks. Cunningham, of course, coming along strong with his ability to score from multiple areas of the floor and shoot the ball. Now, on the season, shooting 33%, but it's really come along in terms of his scoring. And if you look at his some of his game logs in terms of some of his three-point shooting and his numbers and what he's been able to do lately, he's had some pretty good performances here. 3 of 6 from three-point range against the Boston Celtics the other night, 2 of 5 against Charlotte, 2 of 4 against the Cleveland Cavaliers, had a good game against Denver when he went 6 of 9 recently. So it's coming along here a little bit better for Cade Cunningham as a shooter. And then you have guys like Scotty Barnes. Yeah, Barnes, don't really know how reliable it would be outside of the mid-range area of the floor. He shoots 42% from short mid-range, shoots 42% overall from mid-range. I think you wonder about like what Barnes can bring to the table when you're talking about breaking this down from a skills competition standpoint. And Giddey's actually not that good of a three-point shooter, but he's fantastic in the mid-range area of the floor. So I would say edge to Team Rooks, as we're talking about with, you know, Antetokounmpo, Giannis and Thanasis and Alex, and I can't pretend like I know Alex, but they're the longest shots for a reason as we get into it. But round one shooting, we'll get slide edge to Team Rooks. Passing, Team Rooks, absolutely. Cade Cunningham is a really solid passer. Don't get me started on Josh Giddey. We don't even need to break down Josh Giddey. Josh Giddey as a passer has been absolutely fantastic. If you haven't been watching him play, he's 6'8", and he runs the points essentially for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Cade Cunningham has really come along as a passer as the season has gone along. 99th percentile at his position in terms of assist rate. Assist to usage rate, 0.94. It's the 95th percentile as well. He's been absolutely spectacular as a facilitator this year on a limited team. And remember that, again, you don't need people to make shots. This is just passing. We're talking about moving targets, a range in size and distance. More difficult passes worth more points. Guys like Cunningham and Giddey alone should be able to take care of business here. Garland is a really good passer at his own right. But Mobley and Jarrett Allen, you wonder exactly how effective that will be. And the same thing goes with Giannis, Thanasis, and Alex. Again, not really knowing Alex, but it seems like in round two, give me an edge to the Rooks. And then finally, the relay, just overall skills challenge for him, as we talked about. That gets a little bit more even, right? I think the Cavs are at a pretty big disadvantage there with Mobley and Allen. But Giannis, of course, very skilled in terms of his ability to compete there. But again, you've got two backcourt players and a frontcourt guy, Scotty Barnes, competing on Team Rooks, but Giddey and Cunningham run their offenses. These are skilled ball handlers. So I think the Rooks are rightfully favored, and I actually wouldn't mind laying $1.25 if you were going to be betting the skills challenge. So official pick for the skills challenge, Team Rooks and -125. Big on this. Now, with that, let's get to the fun. The real deal is the three-point competition over the weekend. This is my favorite thing. Bet it every single year because it's actually like a like the skills challenge is a competition. But this, you can kind of base it in like analysis, and you have profiles on these guys and how they play, all of these things. So I think there's things here that you're going to like. And for the most part, too, with this three-point contest, you could tell this is pretty evenly matched. The field's not great. It's not sexy. No big names. Luke Kennard, Patty Mills, Fred VanVleet, Zach LaVine, Trae Young, Desmond Bane, CJ McCollum, Karl Anthony Towns got a hiccup right there. So it's not the best. And Luke Kennard has been deemed the favorite by odds makers of +450, but even the gap between him and CJ McCollum, +450 to +750, which CJ McCollum is the second longest shot on the board, gives you an idea of what this field is like. And then you go from Kennard to Desmond Bane, who's at 6-1. There's a bunch of players in between. So this is a pretty tight field. So from there, you kind of break this down, and Kennard on the season, he's a 44% three-point shooter on the year, 299 attempts. He's done a fantastic job. He's been great from both areas, right? Corner threes, he's a 44% shooter. Non-corner threes, 44% shooter. Here's the thing, though, with a guy like Luke Kennard. He has only taken 45 three-point attempts from the corners. And last year, he was a good corner shooter as well. He only took 60 attempts on the season. Hasn't been his most consistent area in his career. Last year with Detroit, he only shot 39% from the corners. And his rookie year, he only took 30 attempts. But still, only shot 33% from the corners. So while Luke Kennard, I think, deserves to be a favorite to a certain extent, definitely not on the list for me in terms of winning this competition. Now, I think a lot of people would be drawn to Patty Mills, and this is just subjective thought, okay, that I'm about to hit you with here. First off, Patty is actually not a really good three-point shooter from the corners. I shouldn't say not a very good one, but, you know, corner three-point shooting, 39% overall might sound good, but from the corners, you want to shoot above 40%, even a little bit higher. You know, case in point, in the last few years, Patty Mills with the San Antonio Spurs last year, 45% from the corner, 46% the previous year, 47% the previous year after that. So it goes on and on and on. This year, he's only shooting 39% from corners. So that would put you at a little bit of a disadvantage if that's going to continue when you get to those corner racks. Non-corner three-point shooting, he's been freaking awesome. 43% from beyond the arc on those above the break threes. Here's my thing, though. When you think of, like, close your eyes and think about Patty Mills, right? When you think of Patty Mills shooting three-point shots, do you picture Patty Mills just standing in a spot, catching it, pulling up, and hitting it? I don't. I'm also closing my eyes too, by the way, for those who are listening. When I picture Patty Mills, I picture Patty Mills coming just screaming off of a screen and curling into a three-point shot above the break, right? Like, that's what I picture. I picture Patty Mills in action, sprinting across the baseline, coming back down on a pin-down screen and getting to the top of the key, catching a shot or catching a pass, and then just pulling up and shooting, right? That's kind of what I picture. And I do wonder if just these spot-up, you know, shots just from a ball rack, does that make Patty Mills comfortable? Does that actually add to his strengths, or does it not really help being a guy who's used to just catching and shooting and pulling up and all those things when coming off of screens? It's just, again, it is just speculation on my part. But hey, man, it's the All-Star game. Let's recklessly speculate about guys and how we think they're going to handle this thing.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time. I'm talking Hall of Famers, MVPs, gold medalists.
I absolutely hate the Colts, bro. This game, I swear, led to the Deflategate.
Hey, guys, this ball's a little flat.
Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl?
Julian walking around, I'm pretty sure he had his shirt off for reasons I'm not sure. He was saying, gotta believe.
Oh, you gotta believe.
From 18-1 with Eli.
Are you calling Bill just a cheater? Is that what you're saying right now?
He's looking for an advantage.
The 2004 ALCS with Big Pop.
The Red Sox in 2004 bounced back after the 3-0 in a winner chicken dinner, homie.
The immaculate reception with Terry Bradshaw.
Fired the ball. I hear the roar of the crowd. I never thought he caught the ball, but he did.
We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So you got the percentages there. Patty Mills is really good, but not on the list for me. Not on the list this weekend. So then we get to one of my favorite players in the league right now. That would be Fred Van Vliet. Now, Fred Van Vliet, very good shooter from all areas of the floor. 41% from three. 47% on corner three-point attempts this season. 39% on non-corner threes. I had two candidates to win the three-point contest. One of them is Fred Van Vliet. I think if you're betting on it, Fred Van Vliet, you can get him at 5-1. 5-1. To me, if I'm taking a shot, Fred Van Vliet at 5-1 is going to be one of the two guys that I'm going to have on. This is Saturday, right? Yeah, over the weekend. for the three-point contest. I think he checks the boxes. He is not as, I would think, you know, in terms of the analysis of how he gets his three-point shooting, he is not a guy, well, he can come off screens and everything like that. He is one of those guys that's more of ball in his hands, will pull up. I think he'd be more comfortable in a situation like this where we're talking about ball racks and just hitting three-point shots, moving on to the next spot and hitting them. So, again, just reckless speculation, but I just feel like I like Fred VanVleet better, and his corner numbers are better than Patty Mills. So, boom, give me Fred VanVleet. Zach LaVine, here's the thing. We can go through Zach LaVine's numbers. Zach LaVine is not healthy at this point right now, and Zach LaVine, of course, is expected to be fine, right? He went to go get the knee checked out, and it looks like he's not going to miss any time. He'll be back after the All-Star break. He was cleared to participate in All-Star weekend. That was 2 days ago, but, like, you wonder, is he really going to go all, like, I don't even know about all out. It's just, you got a guy with a bum knee who just got cleared to play, playing in, yes, only a three-point contest, but still, like, do you really buy it? Do you really buy it? Now, from a numbers perspective, because we cover everything here, right? You got to be, you can't be. What's the word I'm looking for? I can't. You can't be biased. There we go. Zach LaVine on the season in terms of shooting accuracy, and here's what gets you. He's a great corner three-point shooter, and he's going to make a lot of his money on those corners, right? 29-52, but above the break, only shoots 37% this year, which is solid, which is good, and he's a 43-point shooter, a 40% three-point shooter, but he makes most of his money from the corners, so you only get two racks. The rest of these, right, a majority of the racks are going to be above the break, so you wonder what that's going to look like for LaVine when he's not shooting with his strength, from his areas of strength, which are the corners. So after that, then we get to the near the bottom of the list. So Trae Young's on this list. Trae Young's a weird one. I'm not sure how I feel about Trae Young because I think they're still going to have like those Mountain Dew money balls or whatever they are. But like Trae Young, in terms of his three-point shooting, actually the last few years, his time in the league hasn't been good, right? His rookie year, he shot 32%. 2019-2020, he shot 35% from three on 530 attempts. Last year, shot only 33% on 375 attempts. This is the first year that he's shooting over 35% from three for the season, and he's shooting only 39%. He's shooting 39%, which is solid, but he's only taken 13 corner threes. Like, this is a guy that, right, works above the break. We know that. He's a point guard. That's his main area of operation. He's not going to play off ball, camp in the corners, so it's not surprising that he's only taken 13 corner attempts this season. And by the way, he's never taken more than 20 in a year in terms of corner three-point attempts. So give me everything. Give me like everything anti-Trae Young, I would say. And there's some other props we can talk about. Trae Young immediately crossed off. Don't think this is the competition for Trae Young. Which moves us to number two on my list to win the three-point shooting contest. Desmond Bain of the Memphis Grizzlies. Desmond Bain, who is shooting 42% from three this year, 43% on non-corner attempts, 40% from the corners on 84 attempts on the season. Desmond Bain is freaking awesome. I think Desmond Bain at 6-1, give it to me right now. He's going to be the winner of this competition. He is the one that I'm most confident in. I'll have him and Fred VanVleet to win this thing. And we can talk about CJ McCollum and Carl Anthony Towns. And, you know, I'm going to be dismissive of them because whatever. But at the end of the day, I think it's Desmond Bain and it's Fred VanVleet. You want to go through the numbers for CJ McCollum really quickly for those who are actually looking at this and listening. 42% from three on the year. He's actually an 80% corner three-point shooter this year. But strike that. He is a 80% three-point shooter for the Pelicans because he's only shot five attempts and he's 4 of 5. He only shot 33% from the corners for Portland earlier this season. But 42% shooter from three, I get it, but he's not a great non-corner three-point shooter. He's shooting 37% for the Pels, 39% for the Portland Trailblazers. I just put it this way. There is a reason why he is as low on the board as he is, especially given the fact that this is a field that is wide open and isn't really that deep. It's just a bunch of dudes who are kind of similarly rated in terms of the way that they shoot. And then there's Carl Anthony Towns, who is not a good three-corner three-point shooter, shooting 29% this year from the corners. Last year, shot 25%. And while he shoots above 40% from above the break and those non-corner threes, those corners are going to be a problem for Cat. So Desmond Bain, 6-1, and Fred VanVleet, 5-1. You heard it here first. Three-point contest. They're going to win this thing. I don't want to hear anything else about it. All right, so from there, again, like the slam dunk contest, I'm not really a big fan of. And there's nothing really to break down because I have no idea what the hell these guys are going to do. So then we get to the All-Star game itself. And again, not something I'm a really big fan of wagering on. Right now, the total, not shockingly, of course, bet up from 319.5. It's as high as 323 in some spots. It's as low as 321.5, so you can go around and get some certain numbers there. I will say that I do like Team LeBron. Yeah, I do like Team, you know what? Hold on. Let me make sure I got this in my notes right. I think I have my rosters mixed up here for a second because I thought that, let's see. Got to pull this up here. Yep. Okay. Yeah, Team LeBron. Team LeBron, I thought, was the better team at this point right now. When you look at the roster and the makeup of it, but again, like, we're just speculating. Like, am I really going to break down LeBron James, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and those lineups with Steph Curry and him and DeMar DeRozan? No, I don't really give a bleep. I will say Steve Mackinnon did a tremendous job in Point Spread Weekly this week. He broke down each of these players' player efficiency ratings. Then he panned out like what a minutes like a lineup would be, and he did a. I'm not going to do it justice. Just go watch it. So, point of this pod really is to give you, for the three-point contest, I'm going to be on Fred VanVleet, I'm going to be on Desmond Bane, and I'm just going to have some fun this weekend. And I just wanted to have a fun little lighthearted pod as we kind of reach a little bit of a lull on the schedule. Now, again, on Monday, going to have a little bit more of a thicker, deeper podcast. We're going to talk about a few things on there as we look ahead to the next 6 weeks of the NBA season as we get ramped up for the playoffs already here. And I'd also like to say we do have some news coming in terms of hardwood handicappers and some expansion of some sort, which will, I think, is be good news because, yeah, can't do it without you guys. You guys have been absolutely fantastic in terms of support for the pod, looking at some of the numbers. With that, look out for the new episode on Monday. Until then, we will talk to you in a few. Good luck this weekend.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.